Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Hi, I'm Justin Blake, Executive Director of the Edelman Trust Institute. We're joined today by Franz Pascha, Senior Vice President and Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at PayPal. In addition to leading global communications, reputation management, public policy, and strategic research, Franz is responsible for PayPal's stakeholder engagement and social innovation efforts. He brings 30 years of experience and a wide range of cross-sector expertise. He is also a life member of the Council on Foreign Relations and serves on the board of the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU Law School. Franz, we're excited to have you on the show.
So good of you to invite me, Justin. Great to be here with you.
Great. Well, you have a really interesting mix of experience that you bring to your role at PayPal. Can you talk a little bit about that experience and how it informs your work at PayPal?
Sure. It's a story of several chapters, but I think I'm one of those people who found the job that they were preparing for throughout their entire career very late in the game. So I began my career in politics, really working for Senator Daniel Patrick Moynihan, whose picture is right on my desk. After spending some time in Washington, he said to me, "Go to law school. That's where all the action is." So I went up to New York City. I went to Columbia Law School. I then worked for years as a litigator at Paul Weiss, which is a very interesting firm that provided a lot of opportunities for pro bono work, for some interesting election law work, political work. And from there, I became a general counsel. When my daughters were born, my wife and I decided it was time to try a different pathway than the big New York law firm pathway. So I became a general counsel and worked at all the different ways of advising boards and CEOs that general counsels bring to bear. And from there, I ended up deciding, I wouldn't spend my whole career working in law. So I was very interested in crisis communications and crisis management. I went to work at Clark & Weinstock, basically working on companies and institutions that had a shock to the nervous system, and how do you think through how to build resilience, how to navigate crises. This was between the dot-com crisis and the financial crisis, so there was no dearth of work during that period. And from there, I just sort of really started building my interest on reputation management, leadership communications, how to build resilience, how to think through the structures for communications functions, corporate affairs functions. I ended up at McKinsey doing that kind of work. From McKinsey, I ended up finding this role at PayPal. I met Dan Schulman, who had become CEO, and this was before we separated from eBay. And Dan was very supportive of building a corporate affairs function that would essentially focus on stakeholder engagement, which made so much sense in the era we're in.
So it also sounds like your background was particularly well suited to a role that wasn't a conventional communications role, but more a stakeholder engagement role. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that I had thought about the kind of strategic counsel that companies and institutions need to navigate that full spectrum of shocks and bumps and changes and transformations. And over time, I really became convinced that the framework of stakeholder engagement is the right framework if you want to bring all the kinds of advice to bear that a board and a leadership needs to be able to navigate these situations. So, at PayPal, for example, we have essentially five major stakeholder groups: our employees, our customers, our shareholders, our regulators and policymakers, and our communities, and of course, society at large. And so if you think about a corporate affairs function with communications at the center, we're able to really focus on each of those stakeholder groups and create a holistic approach to communications, to the way we practice corporate affairs, and to think about social impact, about public affairs, about communications, internal and external, with a similar framework built on our mission, vision, and values.
It seems like the real challenge and interesting part about a stakeholder model is prioritization of stakeholders, right? Like, easy to have this model when the interests of those five stakeholders align, much harder when they don't. So how do you go about prioritizing your stakeholders?
Yeah. I mean, we have found, you know, in almost every situation, the interests of our stakeholders align around value creation that the company can create for all of our stakeholders. And that if we're thoughtful and rigorous and really stay close to our mission and the values that we've set for PayPal, that we create value for all of our shareholders. When we prioritize, we always start with our employees. And that has felt, and over time we've learned that it's true, that that's the strongest place to start if you're thinking about all of your stakeholders and what they expect from the company, because it's all about your employees. That's your competitive advantage. That's the special sauce of any company. And if you get it right with your employees, you're going to create value for your customers, for your shareholders. You're going to get it right for your regulators. And you're going to have a company with devoted and dedicated employees who are also committed to their communities and are prepared to step up in their communities on behalf of the company, but also on behalf of the mission of the company.
Yeah, sticking with employees, our trust research has increasingly found that employees choose their place of employee, stay there, gain loyalty based on shared beliefs and values. And PayPal has certainly been a company that has been leading in terms of being very clear and articulate about those values. I'm wondering, though, how do you actually take the temperature of the values of the full employee base and not the kind of loudest constituencies within your full employees?
Yeah. I mean, that's a full-time job, honestly, for a lot of us in our team. I think that the clarity of the company's values is helpful because we, you know, when we sort of established the new PayPal, one of the first tasks was to sit down and develop our mission and then to develop the values that we would stand for. And we worked hard at really creating a mutually reinforcing relationship between our values and our mission. So if you think about PayPal's mission being to democratize financial services, to serve vulnerable communities and populations, and to ensure that people have access to the financial system and that they have the ability to improve their financial health and to enable people to move and manage money in safe, affordable, easy ways, that's a very inclusive mission. In the way in which we face the world and our customers and our stakeholders. And our core values begin with inclusion and then include innovation and collaboration and wellness. And so when you think about the system of how those values reinforce the mission and the vision reinforces the values, I think our employees have a very strong sense of the mission of the company and how their work connects to the mission of the company and a strong sense of the values of the company. And if you stick with inclusion, coming back to your question, you know, we also believe in that to be inclusive in, when it comes to diversity of thought and opinion. And so we work hard to make room for diversity of thought in the company community. We try to make sure we're listening and that we're also hearing the voices that aren't as loud. We try to also think about the questions that aren't necessarily being asked or the opinions not necessarily being expressed. That's harder. It requires a lot of engagement. It requires us really working with our employee resource groups, who very often, you know, represent a diversity of opinion within those groups, but are in a position to sort of raise up those voices. And it requires a lot of open and open conversation, where people come to those conversations with respect and a willingness to listen. We don't always get it right, but it's an everyday effort. And I spend a lot of time personally, lots of people on our team spend time personally, really working with different groups across our employee body to be sure that we're finding that balance.
Is there anything that surprises you when you're personally engaging with groups of employees? And in some ways, I'm more curious about employees that are not engaged in an employee resource group or haven't proactively come to you around a topic or an issue, but other employees. I'm just curious if there's been things that have surprised you in some of those conversations.
Yeah. I mean, I've been surprised by how much empathy our employees have for each other in situations where there are varying levels of stress and vulnerability. And, you know, we've gone through as an employee community an awful lot, as I know you have at Edelman and every company has over the last 3, 4, or 5 years. But I've been surprised and heartened by how much our employees have been able and willing to step into hard conversations and really demonstrate empathy and demonstrate respect. And I'll give you a couple of examples. After the pandemic hit and we were really working to support each other around the world, and we had, as you remember, as the pandemic set in different parts of the world, different employee communities were really struggling. And when our colleagues, initially we had colleagues in Italy who were some of the first that were hit, then colleagues later in the pandemic, we had colleagues in India, and India was hit so hard midway through, I think 2020. And, you know, our employee body just rose up to really help our colleagues there. And we had not only just with giving or with things, but with expressing empathy and compassion and creating channels of communication. Also, when there was a wave of violence against the Asian community in the U.S., we had a number of what we call safe space discussions, where people really were very open about the fears they felt and about and really being clear that this was not new, that it was now much more written about in the papers, but not new to the Asian community. And I think for a lot of our employees who were not from that community, but who came onto these conversations and got involved, it was an opportunity for them to really learn, but also to express solidarity. And that was important. And similarly, after the murder of George Floyd, we had some pretty extraordinary employee community meetings to be sure that people felt seen and heard, and that people of different backgrounds and in different situations and with differing levels of personal vulnerability were able to really have a dialogue. And I think, you know, our goal, and I think part of my job and maybe the most important part of my job, is to think always about how we build community during tough times. That we're not just building community when everything's easy, but we use every opportunity should be an opportunity to build strength in our community.
These examples really get to the shifting role of business. As our trust research has found, business is the most trusted of the four institutions we look at, but most relevant to this conversation, my employer is by far the most trusted institution. And it sounds like there's some responsibility, feeling of responsibility within PayPal to step up and to be this kind of community convener during difficult times, and maybe even have some of this empathy that you talked about extend to empathy when there are differences of opinions or differences of perspective.
Yes, I think that's right. And I think we've made an effort to do that. It's not, sometimes you actually even have to go out and seek out some of the groups who may be feeling outside of the conversation. And there's a very fine line, because sometimes there are people in company communities or any community who don't want to be part of the conversation. Their preference would be to not have the discussion. And you have to respect that also. But you want to be sure that people who want their voices to be heard are able to be heard, and that they feel respected. And I think to your point about trust in one's employer, I do think that that became increasingly clear during the pandemic, and has been, and I think has stayed true as companies, and we're not alone in this, have really worked hard to keep people feeling connected during this time when there's been such a hybrid work situation, and where people, global companies like your company or our company, we have people all over the world navigating different aspects of the pandemic at any given time. And that creates a need for a lot of communication, a lot of understanding, and a willingness to be very flexible and very adaptable, so that you can sort of, you can meet people where they are, meet them virtually, and help address, you know, how they can feel more connected to the company community and do their best work, even though the situation around them is changing.
Yeah, and speaking of changes, there's this increased expectation at the same time of business leaders to take stands on societal issues. And this certainly ties into what we've been talking about, but it also broadens to across all the stakeholder groups and reflects a kind of evolution of expectation. Is that something that you've been finding, and how do you react to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think from the very beginning, when we sat down and really thought through our values, and we then articulated them and put them up on the wall. I remember Dan said, you know, pretty directly to our employee body, you know, we've put our values up. Those are our values, and we need to not only talk the talk, but we need to walk the talk.
There's that great line about, I love when Dan talks, like taking the values off the wall.
Yeah. Yeah. Like if they're just up there and we're not doing it, then it's propaganda. It's not for real. And I think Dan really was committed to the authenticity of our values and to how they would guide how we function as a company. And so when we look at these social issues that have arisen, we've really tried to start with our values and with our mission. And so when we've taken stands or when we've gotten involved in social issues, it's always a very direct line from our mission and values, and a direct line from the interests of our employees and how our employees are impacted. And we've tried to be very, I would say, values driven and not political about this. Because I think that, you know, there is, you know, I think a skepticism that arises when employees or other stakeholders think that people are being driven by politics as opposed to being driven by values. So we've really, and I think that debate continues, but from PayPal's perspective, we've really tried to focus on how we function within our distinctive set of values, how we protect and be the employer we want to be for our employees, and how we put our employees' interests first, and to be sure that if we get involved, that we can have some impact, and to be humble. I mean, we can't take a position on everything. We can't get involved in every issue, But there are places where, as PayPal, you know, we can make a difference. You know, if you think about some of the actions we took after the murder of George Floyd, and, you know, could we play a part in addressing some of the inequities in the U.S. economy and to get at the racial wealth gap? And we understood that we did have a role to play, and that ultimately became perhaps our most ambitious social impact initiative. We committed to over $500 million of investment. Our employee body really went to work. We've had, you know, thousands of volunteers involved. We've entered into partnerships with a range of nonprofits working in this space. We've put our capital to work. We've invested in venture, in Black-owned venture funds. We have grant programs. And it was an area where, because of the work we do, because of our core capabilities, you know, we know something about building an inclusive economy. And we feel very strongly about discrimination and creating inclusion. So that was a place where we could bring the mission and values of the company to bear, really mobilize our employees, and in some way play a part in addressing what has been a systemic problem for the nation.
Your work around racial economic equity is very impressive. And one of the things I'm kind of curious about, though, is this kind of cadence between words and actions, because this is an area where clearly it took you a number of years to build this initiative that you're working on. In the meantime, were you still speaking out on issues related to racial justice, economic justice? Were you waiting until you had the action and the program before you did? How do you sequence those things?
You know, I think for us, it's been, you know, we're on a learning journey all the time. And in the lead up, you know, really beginning 7 years ago when we built our social innovation team and built our approach to social impact and our volunteer programs and the approach we take to partnering, we again tried to build and learn from our mission and values in how we would invest our social impact dollars. So we worked, for example, with Village Capital in helping to stimulate community-based nonprofits. We did a lot of work with minority-owned small businesses. And we also focused on gender equity. All of these things sort of go to our core capabilities in the way we build products like PayPal Working Capital or some of the other products we have that support small businesses, support entrepreneurs. And we sort of built step by step our capabilities, our partner relationships. We worked with influencers. We've worked on case studies. We've developed thought leadership and research. I think, as you know, from working with us in different global forums, we've tried to bring research on financial health and on employee financial wellness and on small businesses and what they need, alternative forms of access to capital. So we had the building blocks in place. And interestingly, you know, during the pandemic, before earlier on in the pandemic, before the murder of George Floyd, and when you know it became so clear that the impacts of the pandemic were hitting the Black community in inordinate ways, we had started to look at how we support small businesses and how we particularly support minority-owned small businesses. And we quickly understood that Black-owned small businesses were closing at twice the rate of white-owned small businesses. So when we got into that period around June, we'd already started to think about what's the role we have to play. We hadn't thought about it at that scale, and we hadn't thought about how it might fit together at a time where the nation, where what was happening in our nation required bold action. And I think, but we pulled on when we sat down and when Dan said, you know, we need to really play a part here, the building blocks were there. And I could go to members of our team and who had experience in these areas. We could draw on programs that we'd already learned how to do, partnerships that existed with some nonprofits. And I mean, part of the key is drawing on the nonprofit community and the expertise of the nonprofit community and partnering with the public sector. And we had had some, we've had a lot of experience partnering with the public sector. So I think it's, you know, it's not as scientific perhaps as one would like, but I think if you consciously build those building blocks and you stay in the zone of your mission and values, when those moments come for bold action, you've got the muscle memory, you've got the resources, and you've got experts who you can draw on.
Yeah, those lessons are so important. And I think they're of particular importance because of the issues that you're tackling in this case. You know, one of the things that our reports on racial justice have shown is that most respondents in the US think business are not backing up their words with actions. And most of the businesses I work with, the leaders are very well intentioned. And it's not that they put out words with no expectation of acting on their own. It's that they will often make claims and then not really know how to ensure that those claims come to life. So it's great that you've also got a lot of trust building guidance based on your experience.
Yeah, and I also think that it's a really interesting observation. And I think that, you know, more and more companies are stepping up and realizing that when you say you're going to do something, you've really got to do it. That credibility matters to your employees and to your partners. I think also that for us, one of the distinguishing factors might be that, you know, we involved so many of our employees in building these programs. And so there was a huge amount of energy that came from the employee body. We had volunteers working. One of our criteria for a nonprofit partnership is that it create volunteer opportunities for our employees. We have employees involved in all of those partnerships. And we also drew on employees, for example, who were in our credit organization who came together and helped us develop the grant program. Our government relations team got involved. Our product teams got involved. Our ERGs got involved. So it was a very broad-based community effort that touched on all parts of the PayPal community. And I think that also creates a lot of energy. Our treasury team, our finance team, our ventures team. And it, you know, it was a moment where everyone put their hand up, and we drew on all that energy and support and expertise. And that may have made a difference in this case.
Yeah, it really occurs to me as you say that I think the mistake that a lot of companies make is these efforts feel adjacent. And something in what you're saying makes it sound like what you're doing is core, and that there's clearly leadership at the top that's making clear that it's core. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, it is fascinating. It's something that we've thought about a lot. From the outset of when we built the corporate affairs team, Dan made a decision that we would not have a foundation that was sitting over there, you know, doing the good works of the company. That we would take, you know, and that when we created the new PayPal, we would do our social impact work and our social innovation work from the core of the company. That we would invest in products and services that would make a difference for vulnerable communities. That we would partner with nonprofits. That we'd focus on employee engagement and employee volunteering. That we'd invest in our donation platform as another way to mobilize our customers. And that we would focus the sort of core capabilities and expertise of the company on how you fulfill the social impact mission, as opposed to separating it out, to your point, in a foundation that's doing its own sort of research or check writing. And we've really tried when we make grants to have it be sort of a full engagement grant, or when we have a partnership to be sure that we're building internal expertise as well. And look, I'm not suggesting this is the only way to do it. Plenty of companies have had, you know, tremendous impact. But for PayPal, it has helped guide us and helped us from being spread too thin, because we have a good sense of our core capabilities and what we do as a payments company, as a fintech company, we can draw on in a lot of areas where we can make a difference in the community or for vulnerable populations.
It's such a great model. With the little time we have left, there's something that I keep meaning to engage you in conversation around. And I've been lucky enough that we've been able to see each other in person a few times more recently in the last few years. But as I observe PayPal the last couple of years, it occurs to me, and I wonder, I almost feel like sometimes you're penalized for Dan Schulman, PayPal yourself, being so on the vanguard of leaders willing to speak out and then put actions behind words around key issues, that now there's an expectation that's even greater for PayPal and Dan Schulman than an average company to speak out and take actions. Do you feel that at all? Does that resonate at all? And what position do you think PayPal is in this current environment?
Well, certainly people pay attention to what we do. And, you know, we learned early on, you know, when we took a stand on transgender rights and discrimination against the transgender community in North Carolina, you know, it got very hot very fast, and Dan got death threats, and we had to put in new security systems at our offices. I mean, the world can be very dangerous if you get involved in controversy. But we weren't daunted really, because the issues for us were pretty clear and our values were, you know, at the front. I would say that we get a lot of requests, and as I said earlier, we can't get involved in every issue. And because when we get involved, we really want to put thought and time and energy into it. What I would say about Dan, and Dan would say this about himself, is that, you know, he's not an activist CEO. He's a responsible CEO. I don't think PayPal is an activist company. We're a responsible company. We choose carefully when we get involved. We stay within the contours of our mission and values to be sure that we are able to have integrity and to be sure we're taking positions that are consistent with our mission and values. And we really keep in mind the interests of all of our stakeholders. And I think if you are thinking clearly about all your stakeholders and guided by your mission and values, you actually, you know, are, you know, able to be guided in a very responsible way. And that's been our philosophy here. And I don't think I don't think we're unfairly treated in any way. I think we are, you know, people are paying attention to what we do, and that's a big responsibility also. And we take that responsibility seriously inside the company and outside the company.
Great. Well, I think that's a perfect point to finish on. Franz, I know you and I could talk about these issues much longer, and we'll continue to off of this podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to Trustmakers.
And let me just say, Justin, thank you. And I want to also thank the Trust Institute, because I think you've led a critical dialogue. And, you know, I think thanks to Edelman and the Trust Institute, I think every company is focused on trust as being a core part of their brand and identity. And it's one of the important discussions of our time.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.